You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
They're back together again. Eric and Jeff are reunited as friends. Old Movie BS is back together again.
Hello and welcome to Movie BS with Bayer and Snyder, brought to you by OneOfUs.net. I'm your host, Eric D. Snyder, here with my co-host, Jeff Bayer.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jeff Bayer. That was my co-host, Eric D. Snyder. We're happy to be here.
We sure are.
Right?
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it. I don't know. I'm in a mood.
Well, I don't know what to tell you other than put on your big boy pants and go out and give the internet a show. The show must go on.
On with the show. This is it.
Mm-hmm. We begin every show with an iTunes review. We've done it every single time. We don't have a new one this week, so no iTunes review.
Wait, what episode number is this for us?
315.
315 people? Oh,
yeah.
Wow, and this is the first time that
First time that we didn't have a review to read, yeah.
So that's good, but then it's also sad.
I mean, yeah, I do.
Good and sad.
It's good and sad. I hope that some of our listeners will go to iTunes and write us a review. And we'll read it on the show in old-timey radio voice.
I don't even know this. Do you need – what do you need to review a show? An email account or an iTunes account? What do you need?
I guess you you must have to have an iTunes account, I guess.
Okay.
I think you must. But, yeah, which most people do, I guess.
Yes,
I think that's a thing.
That was kind of a hint, nudge for people to go ahead and knock us out if
you
want to.
Yeah. You know, if you have an iTunes account, if you happen to have one.
Right. Put it to some use.
Mm-hmm. Hey, let's begin with let's talk about a movie.
Let's what?
Well, here we should tell people. We should need to warn you guys up front that the biggest movie opening this weekend, Independence Day Resurrection, Resurgence. wasn't something else? Was there was a Resident? Was did there... did Resident Evil have a resurrection?
Or was it Terminator?
No. I don't remember. Anyway. Independence Day Resurgence didn't screen. Didn't screen for press in the United States. No screenings at all.
Did you notice what he just said, people? As in, it screened for some foreign markets.
Yeah.
But it didn't screen for the United States because Independence Day just, you know, it wouldn't ring true to the American film critics.
Right, right. Like, it's really just a foreign film. I won't say that this is the biggest, highest profile, most expensive movie to open without a screening, but I can't think of one that's bigger and more expensive and higher profile. I can't think of one.
So therefore?
This may well be the most prominent to not have any screenings before it opened in the United States.
I think it has to be.
I feel comfortable saying that because I've tried to think of something bigger. So that
it is so weird.
It is a very bizarre choice, and it throws it may throw the box office challenge for a loop because that was your top pick, and I think we both thought that was going to be huge, and maybe it still will be. We're in new territory here, but that doesn't bode well for it.
Normally, it does seem that there is something with a blockbuster with the addition of positive reviews.
Mm-hmm.
That does seem to – then that movie does seem to be a movie that does very well.
Well, because even if most of the reviews are negative, at least that is publicity and people are hearing the movie mentioned. And I think that even negative reviews have a positive effect on attendance because it, you know, gets the word out there. I think just having silence is not good. But, I mean, maybe it'll open big anyway. Maybe people are really excited. Maybe. Doesn't matter. And they've already bought their tickets.
Good thing the box office challenge ended a long time ago, so we don't need to really worry about that sort of thing.
We'll get to that later in the show.
Okay.
Negative Nancy. but first we'll talk about movies that we did see that were screened for the press. The one that we both saw, Free State of Jones.
Free State of Jones.
Free State of Jones.
Come get your Free State of Jones.
Mm-hmm. Free, well, free.
Come and get it.
Free State of Jones with the purchase of a another Jones of equal or lesser value. It's based on a true story, you know.
Yeah. I had a feeling when I was watching it, and it kept giving me things that I don't know were historically accurate.
It's set in the Civil War, the American Civil War, I should clarify, 1860s, mm-hmm. and Matthew McConaughey is Free State of Jones.
No, yeah,
he is Newton Knight, a poor Southern farmer, Mississippi farmer, who has had enough with the army. Decides, I'm not really into this war.
Pretty much from the get-go,
yeah,
he is established that it, and this is part of the thing with this movie, it really does feel like you're just watching Matthew McConaughey in the Civil War with a really tremendously bad beard. It doesn't give you a lot to go on with this character because it seems like he's already strong-willed.
Right.
He's already seen the worst of the war. And then there was just this one thing that kind of proved to be his tipping
just
point.
Kinda, yeah, the breaking point for him where, okay, I've had enough.
Yeah, and it while it was sad, I was still trying to register what was going on for the film and where I didn't know anything. I hadn't seen any previews. I was still trying to get my feet set.
But you are so insistent on not knowing about movies before you go in. You actually plugged your ears when they taught about the Civil War in school, right?
So
you wouldn't know anything going in.
That's right.
maybe it's because it was fresh in my mind, because I actually just recently read a book about the Civil War and learned things I hadn't known before about the conscription and how so many of the Southerners just were not interested in the war, didn't support it. They thought it was a rich man's war. They're defending slavery, which most of them didn't own slaves anyway, and so what's it to them? And so I had no problem buying, oh, okay, this is one of those guys who's fed up and he's going to desert.
Yeah.
They're plagued by deserters. It was their big problem in the Confederacy. Because also Southerners are also lazy is the other problem. Big deserters.
Oh, and by the way, there's a little bit of a story going on that takes place 85 years later.
Oh, my gosh.
Here's what I was realizing as this movie was happening. There was a lot of what most movies would consider ordinary drama.
Mm-hmm.
And they would just pop it at you suddenly. Like you'd be in a setting, you'd take your time, but then pop, there's a kid in the shadows, or pop, there's mm-hmm. Carrie Russell, or pop, somebody's pregnant. And in the very next scene, delivering a baby. And it kept happening that way to where I realized it was oddly trying to surprise you with the normal stuff of their life by just kind of keeping it almost accidentally secret. Like, it almost felt like it was an editing issue with the flow of the film.
So I didn't get the sense it was trying to surprise us with those things. Just a lot of time was passing very quickly, which leads to my point, which is that the whole thing feels like it wants to be like an 8-hour miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
But it is condensed. And the gist of it is that Newton Knight, Matthew McConaughey, he deserts the army, so then he's hiding out in the swamps of Mississippi, and he joins with some freed slaves, or escaped slaves, I suppose, and they sort of begin this band of resistance that are going to not go to war, going to fight against conscription, and so it's them fighting against the Confederacy, but they're not fighting for the Union, but they and the Union are both fighting against the Confederacy, basically. And he also has there's a slave named Rachel, played by Gugu Mbatha-Raw, who...
Nice job.
Thank you. I practiced. And Newton Knight takes a fancy to her. And what was she in? What do I know her from? Gugu Mbatha-Raw.
Off the top of my head, she was very familiar.
You know, she was in Concussion, and she was in Beyond the Lights.
Yes. She was amazing in Beyond the Lights. That's right.
And Jupiter Ascending. Oh, yeah. Anyway, and so she's there, and the story 85 years later, so the 1940s then in Mississippi, it's someone is on trial for having married a white woman, even though he himself was 1/8 black, and apparently is a descendant of the Matthew McConaughey character, we are led to understand. And I kept waiting for that to be relevant, for that to matter somehow for the main story back in the Civil War, and I'm still waiting. I'm even now, at this moment, still waiting. It's all very anticlimactic, that whole thing. Oh, they could have cut every second of the 1940s story. None of that had needed to be in there. It did nothing.
None of it. The only thing that it served was, wow, the South is really slow at getting over the Civil War.
It lets you know,
we know.
Hey, guess what? Mississippi, how it's terrible now? It's always been terrible.
Yeah, it's a little too telegraphed. Like, you kind of get the sense of dread beforehand as far as that goes. Even though I was just talking about the opposite of that feeling with the basic stories of the drama, but it is also very brutal at times.
Yeah, especially the beginning with the war stuff is nasty.
Yeah, but it doesn't. That brutality doesn't resonate the way a film like 12 Years a Slave did for me.
Oh yeah, no, it doesn't. And they really don't do much of. They don't get into the brutality of slavery. The brutality we see mostly is in the war.
And it's
gross, yeah. But it didn't seem like it needed to be there. I suppose unless part of the point is to register how sick Newton Knight is of this and how awful and nasty it is. And
yeah,
but whatever. So it covers the Civil War, and then it goes past that into Reconstruction, and we see the Klan show up. It's like a movie you would watch in school about the Civil War and post Civil War Reconstruction. And
yeah,
kind of hitting the high
points. And I was interested in hearing about that's the thing. Once the Reconstruction happens, I was just like, oh, this movie became a little bit more interesting.
Yeah,
factually speaking, but it didn't. It suffered from too much McConaughey in this particular way. Like he's already ready to be the preacher. It's just too. Unmanicured McConaughey, because again, I gotta say that beard is not pleasant to look at. Like
right.
That, my whole thing was like, I think that's what my beard would look like if I grew it out, and I wasn't happy.
Right.
That thing. Yes.
Yeah. You know, it was the 1860s.
I get it.
He had the best looking beard in Mississippi for his day.
No. See, other guys chose to manicure it a little bit more. And brush their teeth, but not Newton. He chose not to do these things.
The movie has the movie has unclear aims, and he's generically heroic, and it's not clear what the movie's trying to do other than say, hey, how about that? How about that? Those brave people.
And even what Kerry Russell's character ends up becoming is almost pointless again with the concept of like the 85 years later. And if that can play a role, and is that mystery well served for a film about this insane subject? And I'd say no for the most part.
No.
Yeah.
It's from the writer, from Gary Ross, writer director of Pleasantville and Seabiscuit and the first Hunger Games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not a bad track record for him.
No, not really. Although I noticed. Those all, well, not Hunger Games so much, but Seabiscuit and Pleasantville, like Freestater Jones, are very didactic. Like they're trying to teach, kind of inform, educate, preach some lessons a little bit.
Yeah.
So that's kind of his thing. It's way too long. Oh, it's 2 hours and 19 minutes. Get out of here. It's longer than the actual Civil War.
Factually, no, that is accurate. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
I did the math. It's not bad, but it is it's unnecessary and unengaging, uninspiring. I give it a C.
Yeah, it's a 5 out of 10 for me as well. I wish that my factual information that I was gaining could have been told a little bit more entertaining.
Sure. And then a couple more movies that you, Jeff, did not see. Now,
not totally my fault.
Not totally your fault. No, actually, not
right,
all your
right.
fault. The Shallows is the other wide release this week. And
I had a choice.
You had to choose between The Shallows and Freestater Jones.
Eric D. Snider. I just gave Freestater Jones a 5 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
How did I choose?
No, you made the wrong choice. No, because The Shallows is better than Freestater Jones. Yeah. And it's shorter. I mean, of course it's short because how long could it take to eat Blake Lively? I mean, look at her. She's a snack. The Shallows is about Blake Lively is pestered by a shark. She's very, very bare bones, no frills kind of movie. We gather that she's a med student who's kind of out on a walkabout, kind of, you know, finding herself, traveling around. And she's at this beach in Mexico that that meant something to her mother, and her mother is dead, so she wants to go to this beach and surf on this beautiful, isolated beach. Not many people around. That's kind of an important part.
Was her mom in Jaws 4?
No. I don't think her mom died of cancer, not of shark.
Okay. Are you sure? Did they do an autopsy?
Well, they did show pictures, and one of the pictures was her wearing the kerchief on her head, the standard, I have cancer, so I've shaved my head, I'm wearing a bandana on my head.
Or I messed with a shark, and they bit my hair off.
I feel like the Blake Lively character, Nancy, would have mentioned in her various monologues. If her mother died of shark. But she goes to this beach and she's surfing and, turns out there's a shark. And a shark gets a bite of her, bites her. Yeah. So she's injured. And now she's also then stuck on a rock that is some distance from shore and can't get to shore because there's this shark now. There's also a dead whale nearby. That's the problem. There's a dead whale carcass which has attracted the shark. And so now she is kind of stuck, you know?
Did she Empire Strikes Back it? Did she hop in the shark in the whale?
She did climb up on top of it. Yeah, at first she climbs on top of the carcass as refuge because she's not close to where the rock is. So that's her only place she can. Yeah, she's on crawling up, like digging with her fingernails into the dead whale, climbing up.
Is this PG-13?
It's PG-13, but it. It's close. Like they were really skirting the limits, and you can tell there were things that if they'd wanted to go for the R rating they could have, but instead they they look away or we see her we see her face instead of what is happening to someone else or whatever.
That must suck for people having to look at Blake Lively's face.
But there's also a few things that we do see, or one in particular where I went wow that's a PG-13 wow. Yikes. It's a nice tight 85 minutes and there's not a lot to it. It's no spoiler to say there's not like any like big twists or amazing surprises or whatever. It's a survival thing and good and tense and keeps you interested and does the job.
How is Blake Lively?
She's very good. She's very,
like, you don't feel like, ugh, if it only could have been so-and-so, Scarlett Johansson or whoever.
No, I thought she carried it really well, and she's in pain a lot, and she's scared a lot, and I thought she expresses all of that very well, and I was impressed with her.
You know, I've been a champion of her since
Gossip Girl.
Wait.
Is that the show she was on?
For a second, I was like, wait, was she in Gossip Girl? But yeah, she definitely was.
She's very good, and no major complaints about this one.
There are other people in it, right?
There are other humans in it, yes. Good shark stuff.
Does she marry the man who saves her? Like, is it really obvious that, like, when a man comes to rescue her that she immediately is like, I'll marry you? That'd be spoilery.
She doesn't. I'll just tell you that. No, she doesn't marry the guy who rescues her. If a guy rescues her. If there's a guy who rescues her, she does not marry him. If she gets rescued at all. I'm not telling you. It's good stuff, though. I give it a nice solid B. It's a good solid B movie. The Shallows.
Cool.
So the three big releases this week are about aliens, sharks, and racism. Three things that are terrible, but which you and I are lucky to not have to deal with directly.
It is true.
Yeah. We're lucky in that regard. Many people do have to worry about those things.
I was in the sand on a beach, and I looked out in the water, and I was like, oh, man, oh, my gosh, that's a shark.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. It was a dolphin. But it was really close in. And then after a little bit of, like, I think just hanging out, it's my moe. That's my shark story. Do you have a shark story?
There have also been times where I also didn't see a shark, if that's what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a time I was at the beach and I didn't see a shark.
Cool.
Yeah. So those are those movies. Oh, and then also De Palma. It's about the director, Brian De Palma.
Huh.
Yeah. And it's a documentary about him. It's a very basic documentary. It's talking head. It's a long interview with him talking about his movies with lots of clips and stuff, too, of course. And Brian De Palma, to remind people of some of his movies, his biggest, fanciest, most famous ones. Well, Carrie.
The Blowout. Oh, sorry.
Blowout was one. Yes, later with the Travolta. Scarface, that was him. Dressed to Kill. Body Double. The Untouchables. Have you seen The Untouchables recently?
No, not recently. I feel it's weird.
I need to watch that. Like I haven't seen it forever.
Okay. I know it well.
Yeah.
Is how I feel. But then again, it does feel like probably 15 years, something like that.
Yeah,
but
it's been at least that long for me. But
like,
as soon as I think of it, I think of
like a million different beats in that movie. But yeah, I'd sit through that again.
I'd sit again. And our mutual friend Cole, that's one that he's mentioned that he has not seen and needs to.
Oh, okay.
We should watch that sometime. Anyway, Untouchables, Bonfire of the Vanities, the first Mission Impossible, Snake Eyes. These are some of Brian De Palma's movies. And
yeah, now you're just Snake Eyes, everybody.
What's the movie is really, really entertaining and fascinating if you don't even have to be a big De Palma fan. And in fact, there's a lot of people kind of poo-poo De Palma because he – I know. Because he rips off Hitchcock a lot. That's kind of his thing is ripping off Hitchcock. And so a lot of people think of him as just sort of a talented hack, but a hack. But watching this, I came to appreciate – better what he does, and he's really forthright about things that didn't work and the failures he's had and whatever. He's not like an egomaniac or anything. Like he's very honest about what went wrong here and there. And he's such a great storyteller, and he's very enthusiastic. His exclamation of choice is "Holy mackerel!" which is just endearing. And you really get a sense for, that he loves movies, loves making movies, loves Hitchcock. He talks very openly about how he, steals from the best. It's a really, if you like movies and how movies get made, it's a really entertaining and enjoyable documentary.
Do you see or hear the directors on the stuff?
No, we don't.
Okay.
And the directors are Noah Baumbach and Jake Paltrow, who, what did he, what did he direct? Nothing. The directors are not seen or heard. What are you doing over there? What's going on?
Just open the window.
All right. It's very good. Very good behind the scenes inside Hollywood documentary. De Palma, I give it a B+.
Hey, Eric.
Yeah, Jeff.
It's time for the question of the week.
I do believe you're right. What was the question of the week?
Just stepped on it.
Go ahead.
In honor of Independence Day, what is it again? Independence Day.
It's right in front of you, and it's Resurgence.
Resurgence. What other movie from 1996 should get a sequel? And you people answered. You people, the listeners. Now we ask for this sort of thing. We put it up on our Facebook. You can also email us at
moviebspdx@gmail.com.
But otherwise, our Facebook is facebook.com/moviebspdx.
Twitter.
You can find that at Twitter.
Also, Twitter at moviebs. You can always talk to us
movie
there.
Moviebs, yes. Mm-hmm. And anything you forget, like what did they say? Where do I go? You go to moviebs.com.
Yeah, that's what you do. It's all there.
So the question of the week, that was it. And you people answered. And did you like the same things?
We had
some nice multiples,
which
is good.
And we had some good creative answers that I liked.
Yeah.
Marion and Eric both suggest that thing you do. Eric, this is Eric Herman, not me, suggests it be called That Thing You're Still Doing. He says the band is old but still plugging that one song, which has had yet another resurgence from its use, fittingly, in a milk commercial. Why is that fitting? Is milk a thing in that movie? I feel like milk is a thing, maybe.
Milk is a thing. Somebody didn't drink, maybe.
Yeah. And Marion points out, as long as Tom Hanks wrote and directed again, she says I could use a dose of conflict and villain-free charm in my cinema going these days.
That's the thing about that movie that makes it so rewatchable. It's just easy, breezy hangout.
I was going to say the opposite of that.
Oh.
I really adored that movie when I saw it, and then I remember watching it again maybe a year later, and found it boring because there's no conflict in it.
Oh, okay. By the way,
but I can see it if you've got to be in the right mood. Maybe
I meant almost background music.
Like, sure. That's what that movie is. Oh, yeah.
I'm gonna get some things done, and I'm gonna listen to it.
So yes, that it is good for that. Yeah, because it has got lots of cute, funny things in it.
Speaking of getting things done,
yeah.
Was there ever a movie that showcased that better than Multiplicity? Fred and Andy don't think so, and they want a sequel. Fred says, I could be great to see, it could be great to see what those three clones got up to in the last couple of decades, as well as perhaps they meet some other clones. I mean, others had to be, have been clones besides Doug, right? And then Andy says, it would be great to see what the clones are doing 20 years later. Maybe their lives have gotten so busy that they all needed additional clones. No such thing as too much Michael Keaton, which is, that's a point.
That is,
I think that's a good, that's fairly good.
Definitely true. And Multiplicity, do people, I guess some people remember the movie. I don't think it was a, like a big hit. I remember seeing it then, and I liked it, but I don't feel like this is a movie that people talk about a lot.
Do you know what it was?
What was it?
It was a box office failure.
Was it?
It was talked about beforehand, and then nobody went and saw it. I think it did like, I want to say it did less than 30.
It did 21 million, yeah.
There we go. Well, wait a minute. For what place did that put it? Was that like in the top 10 of the year?
adjusted for inflation, that would be 40 million. Which for today's dollars, yeah, still, 40, still, yeah, not a
and,
not a
and it was supposed to be like it was bragging about its special effects beforehand. Mm-hmm. I remember that
Harold Ramis directed it, and he was a big deal. And this was during the time that Michael Keaton was not being fully appreciated. I think that is true.
He was kind of looking and sifting through projects after he stepped away from The Batman.
Yeah. But yeah, and he makes clones of himself, and yeah, it was good stuff. Good stuff. Oh, Andy McDowell.
Slow down. Yeah, she was in it, and some of it was just stupid, silly stuff. She really does,
man.
Groundhog Day, Four Weddings and a Funeral.
But she ruins movies. She in real life, maybe she's the life of the party. Maybe she makes everything better. I don't know.
Yeah, in movies, she is a. I think she holds the crown for Debbie Downer.
For making movies worse.
She is the movie Debbie Downer, without a doubt.
Then Patrick says, I think given the amazing ambiguous ending, a sequel to Lone Star would be interesting. Do you know this movie at all, Lone Star?
I know it, and I remember knowing that I was supposed to think it was cool.
Yeah.
And then I sat down and watched it, and then it ended, and I had the feeling of like, oh... And I want to say I even, like, talked somebody into watching it with me. Yeah. You know how you did that when you didn't really know about a movie, but you're like, no, trust me, I hear really cool things.
Right.
And at the time, for whatever reason, we both were bored. It didn't work for us.
Yeah, and I don't think I ever saw it. So I don't know if Patrick's idea for a sequel is a good one, but it probably is.
Why not?
Sure, why not?
Let's greenlight it.
Yeah. Jeffrey says The Frighteners.
No. More importantly, Jeffrey says anyway, which means he had previous comments that you can go to our Facebook. Oh, and oh my gosh, Geoffrey, what are you doing?
Called
him Jeffrey.
Sorry.
He said, my real answer is The Frighteners, after he said other things. Peter Jackson and Fran Walsh return. There's a new ghost scene psychic who has to go to an older Michael J. Fox for advice. Yeah.
All right. Sure.
I'm totally good with it. I'm good with a horror movie with some comedy thrown in there. Some lightheartedness thrown in there. And the movie, here's the thing about The Frighteners. It could be improved upon. When you watch it, you see glimmers of greatness there. But the whole thing, it doesn't fully work.
And I would love to see Peter Jackson make a movie like that again.
No. He just needs to do more Hobbit stuff, probably.
Yeah, okay, you're right.
Yeah.
And then I lost it. Where'd it go? Here you are. Justin and Joe both suggest The Rock. Justin says The Rock, but this time Nick Cage is in the Sean Connery role. And Joe says The Rock
100%,
starring.
100%, yep, on board.
Joe says The Rock starring The Rock.
How Dwayne great Johnson would it be
is The if, Rock like, in The Rock?
Right.
Yeah.
That really would be great. People
or maybe in the sequel, no, he's The Rock and people are trying to escape from him.
So it's an inner space sequel The Rock.
Yeah, they're inside of him. They're inside The Rock. They get shrunk down. It's Nicolas Cage and Sean Connery get shrunk down and injected into Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and they have to escape.
Now, Eric.
Huh.
if I know you,
and you,
you don't have an answer to this week's question of the week. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to tell people my answer while you're looking up the list that you provided our listeners, and you'll decide what you would want to see.
I do have a go-to answer. I have not thought it out very clearly, but I do have an answer, actually.
So you have a go-to answer? As in, like, you've been asked this question many a time?
No, but when the question came up, when I heard those guys say it on that podcast last week, I said, 1996. My answer would be Twister. More Twister chasing. Twister 2. Twister 2, Tornado's Revenge. Or The Cow's Revenge. Remember the cow that flew across the screen? Remember how famous that cow was that flew in the Twister?
Yeah. That was a really big deal.
Yeah. That cow won Best Actress that year.
Who actually won Best Actress in 96?
I don't know off the top of my head. Sorry. but Twister and also technology has come a long way. We can make storms bigger and scarier and I don't know.
Right. Well, there was that one insane movie that had like a bunch of twisters and some of that looked good.
Yeah. That one.
Wasn't it the POV movie?
Yeah.
Like found footage movie or something?
Yeah. Into the Storm, I think.
All right. So who are you bringing back in the cast? Actually, that was a good cast. I don't think we're going to be able to get Seymour.
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, but like,
no, he is being very choosy about his roles now. We can get Helen Hunt and Bill Paxton for sure.
We can definitely get Bill Paxton. I forgot
Cary Elwes was in it.
Hang on. They have a kid.
And the kid is storm chasing now.
Helen Hunt. Yeah, and they don't want him to be.
Sure.
And they can't believe that he is, and so then the three of them are chasing. Ugh.
Yeah.
I don't want to watch this sequel anymore, but that's what would happen.
Well, I don't know what to tell you.
It's your fault. All right, my answer.
Yes.
Is One Fine Day.
I never saw that.
You never saw George Clooney and Michelle Pfeiffer in George Clooney's last romantic comedy?
Maybe I did.
In his opinion, his last romantic comedy.
Maybe, like all romantic comedies, it wisped away into nothingness and flitted from my memory.
Yeah.
Best Actress of 1996 was Frances McDormand for Fargo.
And you called her a cow.
I was wrong. I was thinking of a cow from Twister, but no, it was Frances McDormand from Fargo. So One Fine Day.
So anyway, George Clooney doesn't want to do romantic comedies anymore, but here we go. He has to. Because now it's done, and Michelle Pfeiffer's in it with them, and they're just going through life, and that's it. And their kids have grown up, and maybe their kids are going through life. Mm-hmm. Right. I don't know. I just want to see them hang out together.
All right, that's fair.
That's all I want.
I can respect that. So there you go. Thank you, one and all, for your answers. What's the question of the week for next week, Jeff?
The question of the week for next week. Inspired by the new film, The BFG.
Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite Spielberg moment?
What is your favorite Spielberg moment? And we already said you can email us, moviebspdx@gmail.com, or tell us on Twitter or on Facebook or wherever. If you happen to run into us on the street, you can tell us then. Whatever. Now, let's talk about the Summer Box Office Challenge.
I want to live in the present. I don't want to focus on the past.
Last week, I had Finding Dory, and you had Central Intelligence, both of which did very well. Central Intelligence, $35.5 million. That's a terrific opening.
Yeah, especially for my 15th overall pick. That was very nice.
Yeah, well, it was your 8th pick.
Oh, sorry. Yes, the 15th pick was Central Intelligence. The 16th was Neighbors 2, and it only did $21
million. Yeah, see?
And, look at that. Like, that feels great.
Central Intelligence is, of your five movies that opened so far, it is the second best opening.
Yeah.
Just ahead of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But then, yeah, Finding Dory made $135 million and a new record for the biggest opening weekend for an animated film. And, you know, it's pretty big stuff. And so I've had six movies. With my six, I'm at $417 million. With your five, you're at $203 million. Yikes. Yeah. That is a large deficit. But
don't do the butt.
But you have Independence Day Resurgence coming out. That was your first pick. And yeah, I've been hearing a lot of good buzz.
I didn't pick Finding Dory three times.
Yeah, and someone on Facebook wanted to know how you let that happen.
I let that happen because I don't know if it was on the show or after the show, but you told me about Inside Out.
Yeah.
And what it made opening weekend.
Right.
And you're like, no, it was like around 100 million.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? It was? Because I was living under the impression that animated movies open solid.
Mm.
Like, because I had a history of taking animated movies.
Right.
Over like, and, higher
and
than
I,
you.
And I tended to overlook them. I tended to right. not pick them. Yes.
And I kept feeling like, and I clearly forgot about Inside Out. I kept feeling like, all right, you pick an animated movie and you're getting 50 to 70 million solid. You're not getting more than that, but you're sure. getting 50 to 70.
Sure.
And I kept, after not being able to get Civil War, I was just like, all right, what movies have the potential of getting 80 million plus?
Yeah.
And not that they will, but that they have the potential to.
And you just didn't, didn't think Finding Dory was one of those.
For some reason, it was because I wasn't excited about it. Like, it was also that, because, again, yeah. I didn't do, yeah. As I clearly stated, I didn't do homework, and that shouldn't be held against me. I shouldn't just get to have Finding Dory on my team give you one of my movies right now, even though in a way that would make this much more interesting and then people would care and listen to the show more, and I don't want to get into all that. I made my bed, whatever.
You are right that for animated blockbusters, generally, yeah, like 60 to 80 million is like a good solid, and that's where most of them
yes.
are.
Yes.
Only, because I'm looking at the list, only a handful also, have had bigger openings than that.
Right. For the most part, the theory behind the animated movie is you're buying tickets for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also not busting your butt to see it opening weekend
right.
because life is happening
and
there's
take
a
the kids.
Stupid.
Yeah, there's yeah.
You got to take the kids. It's a lot of scheduling thing. There's mm-hmm, birthdays. Mm-hmm, there's mm-hmm. blah 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 blah
sure.
blah. There's kid annoyances for kids you people that don't have
kids. There's are just a yeah. kids are a drain on all our resources. Yes,
they,
absolutely.
They only get in the way for like 25 years, from what I understand. And then maybe not so bad.
Yeah,
but anyway,
this one opened huge.
Yeah,
and
just huge. Mm-hmm. And it would have been nice. If I would have had it, I would have felt very good right now.
Yeah, if you'd had that one, it would definitely be a much closer ball game.
Because in my head then it's like, all right, $44 million difference between that and Civil War. I'm making up for that easy with all of the terrible picks that you're making mm-hmm. In your, mm-hmm. you know, 3 through 10 picks and my amazing 3 through 10 picks.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
like it's like I'm making up seconds mm-hmm. and you're minutes ahead.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter anymore.
Well, but
nobody should care.
Well, no, it's not. That's why they play 9 innings. It's not over yet. You still have 5 movies to go. I still have 4 left. You got Independence Day, Suicide Squad could be huge. We don't know. Jason Bourne could be a contender.
Never heard of him.
Neither has he. That's the problem. He has to figure out who he is again.
Yeah, maybe Ice Age will be just as big as Finding Dory.
Maybe, yeah. Ice Age Collision Course. It's like the 7th or 8th Ice Age. Maybe this is the one that makes 100 million.
I love how somebody was actually giving me crap about picking Pete's Dragon with my very last pick. What else am I supposed to pick?
Yeah.
We've already been through so many movies.
I agree.
Don't beat a man while he's down.
Well,
and frankly,
exactly.
People, I am down.
Yeah. And you know what? Also, you Monday morning quarterbacks, you people, you're not here out here on stage making these picks.
Yeah. You don't know what the bright lights.
Making bets.
The scrutiny.
You're not the ones who will have to live for a week as a Mormon and have to walk around Fantastic Fest with a haircut given to him by me. It's going to be great. I need to start thinking about what I want to do to your hair. Your precious hair.
Okay, so it's Mormon, it's hair. Is there anything else? I can't remember.
There was also some talk of the loser wearing a dog's cone of shame one day at Fantastic Fest.
Yeah,
we haven't yet tested.
I just found out, and it doesn't fit.
We haven't yet tested the feasibility of that.
No, yeah, it doesn't fit. I just tried.
Yeah,
just while you were talking to me right now, it mm-hmm, doesn't fit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, yeah, that'll be great. That'll be great. People will love that.
Erica, I think it's clear by the way that I've acted on this show. I'm just depressed about everything.
Yeah.
The summer box office challenge.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
No, I guess that was about it. But no, wait, there's something else.
Oh, what? What is it?
I'm finally turning 40.
I know. Yeah, I heard that. It only took you 40 years.
Yep, slow and steady. That's how I do it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't like to rush it.
Yeah. So what about it?
Well, I was thinking, how can I use my deterioration of my human body to other gain, perhaps bolstering the show, if you will.
How can you make the most of your impending mortality?
That's right.
How can you profit from it?
How?
Right.
By asking the listeners for something. That's how I can do it.
Oh.
So here's the thing. We have, on moviebs.com, we have a GoFundMe thing.
Yes.
And we've talked about it on and off in the past.
It's our perpetual lunch fund.
Perpetual lunch fund. Buy us lunch if you would be so kind.
Kind of a tip jar. People can throw in a couple bucks if you like it. And there you go. Yeah. Ongoing thing.
We are not getting rich quick from doing this podcast, but we absolutely love doing it. And I don't want to threaten people.
We're not even getting rich slowly.
No, that's true. This isn't like a do or die situation.
I'm not
going to die if you don't do, but my soul will break. There is that. So here's what we're doing. In addition to the GoFundMe, which is just like if you have a one-time thing that you want to toss our way, we appreciate it. We'll also promote your things. That's very nice. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, we've started a Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we would like. This is what I would like. This is what you would like. This is what my birthday needs to feel whole. We've set it up to where you can be, in a sense, a subscriber,
a patron,
yeah. If you will, $1 an episode.
Right.
You can sign up and, there you go. It's simple to sign up. It'd be $1 an episode. If you can do that, that would be amazing. What we would love to see is 40 people for my 40th do that before I turn 40. I turn 40 on July 14th, French Independence Day. Yeah.
So you got like 3 weeks or something, you guys.
You got like 3 weeks or something.
For 40 people to sign up each, pledging a dollar per show. Yeah.
And this is what I want. I literally do want just $1. Go showboaty and go $1.25.
You don't need to. No, seriously, $1 is plenty. $1 a show. If we do a show every week, that's 52 shows a year. That's $52 a year.
That's plenty. That is like you're going without one third of your regular coffee every day, but you're only doing that once a week. So it's really like it's nothing to you. If you can do it, and if you can't do it, don't do it.
Sure. Yeah. For most of us, if I just lost $1 every week, like I wouldn't notice that if $1 just disappeared.
What I'm actually going to do is I'm going to lose $1 a week in tribute to this idea.
And the thing is with this, you can cancel anytime you want. It's not like a forever thing. You sign up, and then every time we do a show, it'll charge you $1 based on whatever credit card or debit you put in. And you cancel anytime you want. If we don't do a show, we take the week off. Nobody gets charged. And here's what you can do. Sign up, pledge $1 till we get up to 40 of them. And then after Jeff's birthday, then you can cancel if you want to.
Oh, that's true.
That's our goal right now is to get $40 an episode.
$41.
And then in the future, we may have other goals. If it gets bigger, we'll start, we could talk about things we could do as perks or bonuses.
We could do I immediately thought of two bonus shows that we could do sometime. We could do like our – and actually have to make it and work at it, like our top 20 of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And also maybe like do like our top 10 TV of all time. Because on occasion people are like, what shows do you watch? What TV are you guys really into? We could do that. Those could be bonus episodes.
Yeah, those are things we could do that. Yeah. If it gets to where we're, there's a good amount of money coming in. Because obviously the show doesn't cost a lot to do. We have web hosting fees that aren't nothing, but it's not huge. It's more just, for our time and trouble, which also is not very much. So we don't need thousands of dollars. But yeah, if you want to throw something in the old tip jar, little mm-hmm. pledge, be a patron, and that will help. And then yeah, we can do other things later. And obviously the money goes toward our film festival travels and all that kind of stuff that we do.
That's right.
So anyway, that for Jeff's
It'd
birthday.
Be nice.
For Jeff's birthday, please, 40 people have to sign up, or else he'll be impossible to live with.
Well,
impossible.
I'm quitting.
You're quitting the show.
Done.
If we don't get 40. All right. That's an ultimatum. There you go. There you have it.
But I really love this show and I want to keep doing it.
Oh, well, then you shouldn't have made that ultimatum then, huh?
Well, but I'm a man of my word.
What if they call your bluff?
Unless I change my mind.
So there we go. So that's the end of the show then, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've covered all the important things.
We'll have a link for if we didn't say it, it'll be on MoviePS.
Oh, yeah. No, that'll all be on there. Yeah, the Patreon thing. Yep.
I don't know where you find it.
But
we like the idea of you doing it.
It's patreon.com/moviebs. And yeah, we'll have a link on Facebook and cool. Our website and stuff. So Free State of Jones, not very good.
No, it's not.
No. And De Palma, pretty good. Like, really enjoyable documentary about Brian De Palma and his movies and movie making in general. The whole, inside the sausage factory. And what was the other one? Oh, The Shallows, pretty good, Shark. Shark yeah. coming after Blake Lively. That Shark has good taste. Am I right?
That Blake yes.
Lively, she's something else.
She is.
And question of the week, tell us your favorite Spielberg moment. Movie moment, not just like a time you ran into him on the street or something.
Whoa. If you ran into
him. If you did, yeah, all right, fine. All right, yes. If you have a personal Spielberg moment, yeah, I guess you can use that.
Yeah.
And that's all. So until next week, for Movie BS with Baron Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Baer.
Thanks for listening and good day.
I said good day.